Hello, and thanks for joining us for Education in Focus South Asia, a series of podcasts focusing on areas of debate in education in the South Asia region, brought to you by the British Council. My name's Rob Lewis, and later on you'll be hearing my co-presenter, Simon Borg. In this first episode, you'll hear Simon and I discussing with our guests what makes a successful education system. To get an introductory view on this from the South Asia region, I spoke to Maya Menon. Maya is director of the Teacher Foundation, which works with public and private schools across India. I asked Maya to begin by saying what she feels are the main features of a successful education system.
I would say the key features of success in any national education system, not just India, anywhere else, is I think having crystal clear 25-year vision. And I say 25 years because I think we have to have a long-term view about something as important as education. So I think that's one important aspect. The other is, I think, having a clearly articulated education policy that includes, which of course is what the 25-year vision is about. And this education policy has to include aspects of governance, curriculum, teaching, learning, and assessment policies, school leadership development, teacher education, both pre-service as well as continuing professional development, career progression for teachers, establishment of an independent, responsive, and supportive inspectorate of schools, which is something we don't have in India, teaching schools of excellence in every city, district, block, and cluster, in every village or a small town in the country. And of course, having purposeful links between schools and the local university and the community at large.
Okay, now, what can you say about the situation in India currently?
Till recently in India, we have tended to have individual schools of excellence rather than statewide effective systems. However, in the past 2 to 3 years or so, the government of the city-state of Delhi has effected remarkable improvements in the public schools infrastructure as well as learning outcomes, with an enhanced focus on teacher as well as school leader accountability. And this has been feted about in the media and so on. This has happened owing to the education minister of the state making it his personal top priority. And he has also rallied around a highly competent and committed team of NGO partners to implement his vision and plans.
Right, that's quite an interesting example. Is that kind of thing happening elsewhere in India?
We have, in the past, have also had, not in this dramatic way, but we've also had some commendable success in the southern state of Tamil Nadu, where there's been a statewide thrust on activity-based learning in all their primary schools. And that's been quite a successful model that other states have tried to emulate.
That was Maya Menon speaking to me there. Now, to explore this theme in more detail, Simon spoke to Rukmini Banerjee. Rukmini is CEO of Pratham, a large NGO working towards improved quality in education in India. Simon started by asking Rukmini about what features of an education system are likely to help students achieve their outcomes.
I think that the successful education system, in my mind, is one in which the goals and capabilities and the potential of the adults in the system to be able to help the children are all fairly close to each other. By that I mean that, you know, if by 8th grade you as a child are supposed to have mastered or at least be sufficiently comfortable with, you know, a certain level of math, your curriculum from grade 1 to grade 8 should have led you in some kind of a stepwise or spiral fashion to this outcome. And your teachers and your other systems should all be equipped and capable so that at each year along the way, most people are able to make it to the next step or next level. That's what I would imagine would be an effective system, that the goal that you've set out to do, you're actually able to achieve it.
So one of the key maybe characteristics you're highlighting here is what we might call alignment between goals, alignment between teacher competence, alignment between curriculum. These different elements you've mentioned, it's important for them to be aligned to make the system effective. Is that interpretation correct?
I mean, alignment, coherence, something that connects the processes that go into this to the goal that you hope to achieve.
The next question, therefore, naturally would be to what extent, in your view, do educational systems in South Asia or in India have such qualities?
I would say that, on ensuring that everybody gets into school, we have good systems in place. So if one goal was universal enrollment and you had to have a set of systems or processes for that, I think perhaps we are quite good at that. Now, if we look at learning goals and think about what are we achieving even by the end of primary school, we see a big gap. And I think a very good way to describe that gap comes from the title of a favorite paper of mine. A favorite paper that I have read. The author is Lant Pritchett, who's an economist at Harvard. And the title of the paper is self-explanatory. It says, "The Negative Consequences of an Overambitious Curriculum." So the fact that by fifth grade in India, you have 50% of children who are not yet at second grade level tells you something about a misalignment of expectations and capabilities.
In educational systems more generally, what role do universities play, in your opinion?
So I would imagine that, universities are places where research is done, where the next generation of people who are going to think about things are trained. And even for running of a current education system, what is an appropriate level of curriculum? Because there is no point in having expectations or standards which are so high that they are unreachable by most teachers or children or parents within the system. And I think that effective education systems are those where you actually have, goals which are achieved by most people. So universities would play a key role. Universities and other research institutions would play a key role in actually ensuring, reviewing, revising these system connections to create this coherence. And that's where really there are people who presumably have both the skills as well as the resources and the time to think about what is the next step that an education system should take.
Okay, now we spoke to a local educationalist in terms of a preliminary interview, and she felt that one feature of educational systems that improved them was a long-term perspective. I'd be interested in your views on the extent, again, to which that is part of educational systems in South Asia generally.
Yeah, so I think that you can't have an annual plan. You need to have a 3-year or a 5-year plan about where you are today. And even if, what I described, that if you see that your basic learning levels are quite low, what is the plan and how are you going to move it to get to a much better situation 3 years or 5 years from now? Understanding that change cannot be, super dramatic in one shot. You need to move a lot of things and a lot of moving pieces of the puzzle together. So I do think that a long run perspective is important, but it has to be that long run has to be broken up into some kind of a medium run as well. Because otherwise it is possible that you think that, for example, teacher training, that you need far better teacher training institutions who can make our teachers far more capable. I mean, I think this is a long run ongoing process that has to happen, but it can't happen without thinking about what is the goal that you need to reach in the next 2 years or 4 years for which you are getting prepared. And it's only on the basis of the incremental improvements you make that you really can plan for the next stage that is ahead of you.
So Rukmini, you've highlighted in your comments, a number of challenges that educational systems in your context face at the moment. You've talked about them being maybe over-ambitious. You've talked about maybe a focus on learning large amounts of content rather than on quality. You've talked about maybe short-term planning. What are some of the solutions to these problems suggested by practice and research in the area of effective educational systems?
In India, we have been one of the, and I'm now speaking from the point of view of the work that we as an organization called Pratham have done, both by ourselves and in partnership with state governments. We have evolved an approach which we call teaching at the right level, which says that regardless of the grade in which you are, particularly if you're in, let's say, third, fourth or fifth grade, rather than teaching you at your, as a age group, which is in a particular grade, how about if we group you by your, by the level of reading that you're at and use some methods which actually, and, you know, help you to decode and develop vocabulary and so on and so forth, but based on the level at which you are rather than at the level of the grade level curriculum. And we have seen over the years and iterated over the years substantially that today we find that, you know, in 30 or 40 days, kids who are already in school and have been in school for a number of years can actually pick up these foundational skills in a very short period of 30 or 40 days. We've done this with, you know, children directly, and we've also done this working through a large system of, you know, a state government with teachers there. So we see that if you depart from your business as usual types of ways of operating, there are more effective ways of dealing with the problems that you see. And this teaching at the right level approach that I'm talking about has been evaluated by external and university-based international researchers many times, so that what we are saying right now has a lot of, you know, evidence backing it as well.
That's very interesting. And I guess one question that that raises is, what are the implications of these alternative approaches to learning for the preparation of teachers? So in the interventions you've described, did teachers receive particular support or training to enable them to approach teaching and learning in this new way?
Yes. So, you know, when a state government decides that they want to try this method, we do a couple of things. One is we say that they have to be some leaders of practice. You know, to bring about a change, they have to be some people who can lead it, who have done it themselves first. So the design phase is obviously important, but there has to be a phase in which there's a number of people who will say, if I'm saying in 40 days you can make a big change, then there need to be some people who at least will try this for, you know, 20 days, 30 days, perhaps the whole cycle, so that they are able to test out the new approach themselves and make sure that it indeed will lead to the results that we think they will. Our second step is to say it is these leaders of practice who then do the in-service teacher training, because it's best to be led by someone who is a master, who can not only guide you, but who has also been through every step of that, you know, like you do in many other professions, right? And so that the teacher training, therefore, is done by those who have been a step ahead in the game and have mastered this method themselves. So that's what we do with the in-service teacher training. And I would say that since we find this to be an effective method, we often try to convince the state government that include this as part of your pre-service teacher training as well. So that a fundamental piece of, you know, moving ahead within the education system is to ensure that all children at the right time acquire the basic foundational skills that they need, on which then you can build other buildings and other stages. But it doesn't come from a different kind of training. I think the whole impetus for this comes from recognizing a big gap in the system, prioritizing a solution for this gap, and then implementing it not only with existing teachers and schools, but also with those who are going to enter the system. So it's really, again, I would come back to a goal-oriented approach, recognition of problems and then solutions that follow. And the teacher training part is one part of system alignment.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I guess another important part of a national educational system is assessment. And I've worked on projects where one of the challenges has been that teaching is being reformed, but assessment systems remain the same, and therefore there's been a lack of alignment between, you know, new approaches to teaching and learning and existing approaches to assessment. Is that something that characterizes the educational systems in South Asia more generally?
Yes, and I would say that perhaps if somebody had to say to me that pick one, only one thing that you can change the system right now, I would change the exams we have at 10th grade. Because it is that exam, which is the first big exam that you do across the system, that really has implications all the way down. And, you know, if you think about whether it's overambitious curriculum, whether you think about, you know, the fact that you see when these exams are taken that there is a lot of failure or cheating, all of this emanates from the fact that I think that what we require kids to do in 10th grade is unreasonable. And the system below it certainly does not prepare. I mean, it may not be unreasonable for the elite. It may not be unreasonable for those who are at the top of the class. But I think it is unreachable by a majority because you have not had adequate stepwise progression from the beginning. And therefore, I think that reworking what is a doable goal for all, and then maybe excellence for a few, if that is the nature of your work in an education system, then we need very substantial, you know, reworking of both what do you expect as an outcome, and then, of course, associated with that would be how do you expect to assess it. Just a simple example, if you have, you know, more than half the children in fifth grade who can't read, having a pen and paper test in fifth grade makes no sense at all because most children can't read what you're asking them to do. And therefore, we have achievement surveys in India which base their results on kids in third and fifth grade reading a traditional question paper and being able to answer it, I think doesn't give you useful information because you're basing it on a set of capabilities that you have not helped the children to acquire.
Yes, that's a very clear example of a problem which can affect an educational system dramatically. Yes, I'd like just to finish by going back to the issue of teacher competence because this seems to be quite important. So you've recommended certain changes to goals, making them more realistic in terms of what learners can feasibly achieve by a certain age. What about if the argument were that learners aren't achieving enough because teachers are not skilled enough? Is that an argument you would agree with or take issue with?
No, I don't agree with that because I can give you enough examples. And again, these are from research studies. It's not just sort of our own experience or opinion, which show that, I'll give you an example of a particular study that was done in the state of Bihar a couple of years ago. This is a study, the intervention was something that we as Pratham, the government of Bihar, were doing, and the evaluation was done by the group at MIT called the Poverty Action Lab. And they do a lot of very rigorous research using randomized control trials. So the situation there was that the problem, the learning challenge, as I described it, you know, was what we were trying to tackle. During the school year, the teachers were oriented and given a lot of methods, you know, interactive, much more, I would say, engaging methods to teach, but without changing too much of what were the curriculum expectations. And then in the summer, there was a summer camp, same teachers, same schools, where you put aside your curriculum, you group children by level, and you worked on their foundational skills, and the same teachers did it. What you found was that the learning gains made in that 1 or 2 months of the summer were higher than what could be achieved through the whole year. The people implementing it were the same. The difference was what was the learning goal and how was the system reorganized to be able to achieve that goal. So I think that, of course, anywhere, at any level, whether in India or elsewhere, you could always have better teachers, more capable and so on. But I think the question that needs to be asked is, they have to be made more capable for achieving what? And it is the what, I think, that really is holding us back. Because today what the teachers are required to do is to teach from the textbook of the grade level curriculum, regardless of the distribution of children that are sitting in the class in front of them. But when they are freed up to say, put aside the curriculum, look at the kids in front of you, let us help them achieve the basics first, then the same teachers with a little bit of help are able to do it. So the real difficulty, I think, lies with what is our goal. If the goal is clear and the system is allowed to be coherent in terms of achieving the goal, I think, you know, we have sufficient capability.
That was Rukmini Banerjee speaking to Simon. And Simon's joining me now just to exchange some final thoughts on what we've heard in this episode. Simon, from both Rukmini and Maya, one of the key points that came through was that of long-term planning, Maya even suggesting 25 years. Rukmini was a little more conservative, but still.
Yes, long-term planning is essential, whether it's 5 years or 25 years. In an effective educational system, policymakers need to look ahead, to define clear educational goals, and to establish coherent strategies for achieving these over time.
Right, but at the same time, as Rukmini said, planning needs to be realistic.
Yes, absolutely. For example, if the goals of the curriculum are overambitious compared to what the educational system can feasibly deliver, there are clear dangers that many students will be rushed through a system that is not set at the right level for them, and which, as a consequence, does not make compulsory education a positive experience.
Okay, and I suppose Rukmini's comments on the importance of realistic assessment seem particularly relevant to this point.
Absolutely. It's perfectly okay for a curriculum to have ambitious targets in relation to what students will learn. But there is a point, I think, where ambition becomes unrealistic, and this can result in assessments which targets levels of achievement which are way beyond most students. So effective educational systems will set realistic targets which take into account students' starting points and the educational resources available to support them.
Okay. Thanks, Simon. If you're interested in reading more about the theme from this episode, you can find related links on the same page as this recording. And if you'd like to comment on what you've heard, and we would love to hear from you, you can let us know what you think on Facebook or Twitter using the hashtag EducationSouthAsia. That's hashtag EducationSouthAsia. Now, there'll be other episodes in this series too, covering themes from learning outcomes to educational planning. So be sure to look out for them. Thanks for listening to this episode of Education in Focus South Asia. From Simon and me, goodbye.